Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. And thank you again for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Sometimes the war that veterans fight is not the one overseas on foreign soil. Sometimes the war that they wage is on a daily basis, and it's the one in their heads as a result of past trauma. The lady with us today has suffered trauma I can't even wrap my head around, from a troubled childhood to Marine Corps combat veteran and sexual assault survivor, and now she's a doctor. Sergeant Athena Ives is using her experience to help others thrive in times of trauma. With her book, Thank You for Raping Me, Athena details her journey through the depths of hell into a place of healing and resilience. Thank you so much, Athena, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad you had me on. I appreciate, you know, just giving me the opportunity to talk. And I can't be doctor yet. I'm a doctoral candidate. I'm almost there. I will get there one day, but I don't want to misrepresent my title. So I can't wait till I can be called Dr. Athena Ives. I'll be amazing, but not yet. I'm working on my dissertation right now. So I finished the core classes and I'm on chapter 3 of my dissertation. So, wow. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Athena has a beautiful ring to it. I have to say that.
As soon as I get that title, I'm so going to go get the license plate, and it's going to say Dr. Ives, but then what does that spell?
Oh.
Drives. Oh.
It's not going to be as cool then.
No, but still.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being so patient too. We had some technical difficulties with microphones and everything. So Athena is joining us by phone, but she still sounds fabulous. So we're just going to roll with it. We're going to start off where we start off with everybody, really. A little bit of background about yourself and why you chose a life of service. Where did you come from?
I was born in Encinitas, California, which is basically in San Diego, California, Southern California. And my family moved our family to Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, when I was around 10, 11 years old. Went to school there, absolutely hated it, hated everything about that state. Just, it wasn't for me. I was a Cali girl. I loved the heat. I loved the non-four seasons. I like the one season where it's just warm. I hated the bugs in Michigan. They were just horrible. But I moved back when I was 18. Actually, I was 20 when I moved back, because in Michigan, I got a full ride scholarship to play soccer in the small little Catholic school. So that didn't go as planned. I had a very severe knee injury, which ended my soccer career. So I decided to come back to California, where it was always been my home. And I taught preschool for several years. I was the lead preschool teacher, so had 4 and 5 year olds. And in California, the cost of living, I was basically just making ends meet. I couldn't even afford a one bedroom by myself. I had to live with people, and I had always wanted to travel. So I also was getting to that point in my life where I was going to regret not joining the military. It had always been something that I had wanted to do. I was always patriotic from an early age. I don't know why. My family is not really patriotic. But, you know, at the soccer games, you hear the national anthem, I would tear up. I don't know why. It was just always something I felt that I would regret not doing. So I joined the Marine Corps, and it was one of the best decisions of my life. So served from 2006 to 2010, and then I got out, went and traveled the world, lived all over the world, lived about two years in Asia, in Japan, Indonesia, Thailand, and I did a lot of other traveling around there too. So I'm back in San Diego, and I'm finishing up my doctorate. My thesis is on military cultures' influence on resiliency in military sexual trauma survivors. So how does the military's culture impact that recovery process? So that's what I've been spending the last few years working on.
Wow, that's awesome. You have so many experiences and stories to tell. Like we were talking offline about, you know, saying pho, the Vietnamese soup properly. So
yes.
And I love Thailand too. We had an opportunity to go to Thailand last in October, and that was amazing.
Oh, it changed my life. I have never gotten to a place that I knew the first day I was going to live there. It was just breathtakingly beautiful. The people were so amazing and kind, and it was just one of the, it was an incredible opportunity, and I'd highly recommend people going, and not just going to Thailand, but just traveling in general really, really helps change you, and it makes you a better person, I believe.
So don't wait until you're retired to travel the world. Do it now.
Well, you could do it at any age. You know, I know a lot of people, I highly recommend doing it now if you can, but I know there's so many people out there in situations where they are so self-sacrificing. Their priorities, their kids, their priorities, that company, their priorities, that mission that they've been working on. Now, if that's the case, that's fine. It's just people that let fear hold them from traveling. And to those people, I mean, I've been to most of these countries by myself, and I have never felt safer in those countries. I was never fearful of my life there ever. So other than Iraq, I mean, that was totally different circumstances.
You're kind of part of, like, you know, the enemy group and everything. So,
yeah.
So you said in our email together that we pretty much had no holds barred. So I just kind of want to get down and dirty into it. I heard on another podcast that you had described your childhood and it was kind of rough. Can you briefly kind of tell us your little bit of history about that?
Yeah. So I wasn't completely aware of how prevalent this was and how common this was until after I published my book and started getting a lot more in-depth studying of sexual assault and statistics and different information. This is so common. And there's so many people that are absolutely terrified to talk about it for very understandable reasons. I was brought up in a church that was, I describe, very cult-like. It was a Reformed Baptist church, and it encouraged that male chauvinistic attitude where you women belong in the kitchen, you shut your mouth, like women don't talk, women dress modestly, women can't do this. Getting calls from these creepy old men complaining about the way I dressed because it provoked them sexually. Like it wasn't too tempting and enticing. And I was like, I was in pants and a t-shirt and I was 12 years old. Oh yeah. Just the stuff that we had to put up with. There was actually a sex trafficking ring, so many cover-ups, domestic violence, sexual abuse, just then you name it, they covered it up. So a lot of people, and that's not just Reformed Baptist. So many different extreme religions. Religions aren't bad. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that there's the extremists in most religions that ruin that name that of, you know, organized religion. It just brings that, the benefit that could do from people, and kind of destroys it. So I grew up in that kind of an atmosphere. And then to add to it, my brother started raping me when I was 11 years old. And I might have been younger, I'm not sure, because, you know, so many people, you know, they see in the news or they hear people's stories about being sexually assaulted, and they nitpick on the details. They're like, well, wait a second, those dates don't add up. You weren't that old, you were this old, you weren't, you know, different things like that. But when you're that age and you're going through something that traumatic, your body is in full protection mode. So if it has to block out certain aspects for you to keep going, if it has to forget certain things about that crime, it does that. But one thing that most, if not all, sexual assault survivors will have in common is they will never forget it. That thing, that moment will live with them for the rest of their life. It will affect so many different aspects of your life, from, you know, relationships and intimacy to trust to being around men or other women, being around people that you, that remind you of that moment. And so that's why I'm not 100% sure how old I was, but I can tell you in graphic detail what happened. And I don't know how long it went on for, but I will never forget the first time. And I didn't tell anyone. I was too terrified. And growing up in that kind of an atmosphere, you're just told you're going to hell if you have sex before you're old enough. And you're going to hell if this. You're going to hell for this. So I was completely convinced at that age that I was going to hell for what had happened. And it wasn't, I had done nothing. And the other part of me was just wanting to forget it, like just deny it happened. Because if you deny it happens, you can, you know, find a way to keep moving on. And at that age, I had no one to talk to. I had no one I trusted. My father was, both my father and mother were very abusive. My brothers were abusive. My sister was abusive. I had nobody. And the only people I actually trusted were my aunts and uncles and relatives that lived in California still. And, you know, but their past showed that they knew what was happening, not to that extent, but they saw the physical abuse. They saw the bruises on our butts when our CPS took us. They saw the damage my father was doing to us repeatedly, both emotionally and physically, and they did nothing. They never stood up for us. So I really didn't have any way out. And then not only that, but the past experiences with law enforcement and what we were told as a church, you know, like what our church told us is that they were bad people, that if you went to them, they would put you in an even worse situation. So I was completely convinced that, like, no one could find this out. And I would just fall asleep every night and tell myself, never happened, repeated that mantra over and over again. And at around 12 or 13, I was seriously considering suicide. I was researching it, the library, how many pills to take. I prayed every day that God wouldn't let me, like, live. I prayed that he would let me die in a car accident or some crazy disease, or he would just take me very quickly. And then my sister was born, and she completely changed my life. And she really brought me out of that really dark time. And her unconditional love and her just, like, being there saved my life. So, yeah, that was kind of my childhood. And I got away from there. And so thankful that I was lied to growing up, because my parents told me that dragons and unicorns were like seahorses and dinosaurs. Seahorses and dinosaurs aren't real. They're magical creatures that whoever made up, like, with the whole Big Bang theory, like, that's what they threw it in with, like, you know. And then I went to an aquarium one day and I was like, what? They lied to me. This is sitting right here. It's like swimming around in front of me. It was a leafy sea dragon. Aww. And I was just blown away. And at that moment, I started thinking on my own. I started not believing what the pastor said. I started going to the library and reading and figuring out things for myself. And that was a very transitional point in my life, and why I appreciate and love science so much, because, you know, there's really no arguing with statistics. You don't care how amazing you think you are, but yeah, you lied. Like, I'm seeing the seahorse in front of me right now. Like, how are you going to explain that one away? So I'm very thankful for that, because I was able to really escape that whole life and find a new one. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And I cannot believe how much you endured at such a young age. That is just incredible. So, transitioning a little bit to your time in the military, mm-hmm. Did you have a traumatic event there too?
Oh, yes.
Many?
Several. Well, I joined kind of late, and I was going through a really difficult breakup with one of the first real relationships I had ever had in my life. And the first ones are always the worst. And this one was pretty bad. And I needed a change. I had wanted to join the military, but it wasn't necessarily under the circumstances that I would have chosen, because it was kind of like a last, I don't care, just send me any, like, send me now. Like, I was going to go intel or be an MP, because I was looking into, you know, being an investigator or being NCIS or CID or one of those. And I was very interested in that path. But those options weren't available at that time. I would have had to wait like 6 more months. And I was like, I can't wait 6 more months. I need to get out of here. So I just signed up under what's called the ground combat option. And under that, it's like MP and all those jobs that I was looking into. And they said that, of course, they always lie to you. And they're like, oh, yeah, you'll more than likely get MP. We need a lot of those. So I was like, okay, fine. So I went to boot camp. No one even, my roommate knew I left. That's about it.
Wow.
And I get there and like, I remember when they're screaming at you and they're telling you to call home. I didn't have anyone to call. But they require to hear someone on the other side of the line. So I ended up just calling a friend of mine. I was like, hi, I'm here. Goodbye. And then, and then at engineer school, I had bonded with a lot of these guys because I had gone through Marine combat training with them. I had seen them at boot camp. We were there at the same time, different things like that. And I had started to develop like a brother sisterhood with these guys. And, you know, like I actually spent the night with a few of them in hotel rooms, like, you know, just sleeping fully clothed in the bed next to them. They were like my brothers. I was preparing to go to war with these guys. I believed I could trust them. I had opened up my heart to some of them and talked about relationships, helped them with theirs, different things like that. So I trusted them. And I went out, they invited me out to go to this drag racing event. And I had one drink and woke up being raped in a hotel room. I was completely drugged. You know, I just remember waking up to that. And, I woke up, pushed him off me, fell out of the bed, went running for the door because I had to puke. And I saw my friend sitting in the chair watching, just staring at me. And it was somebody that I literally like called him like my brother. I had spent hours talking to him and, you know, sharing how heartbroken I was about my boyfriend. I was still a virgin at the time. Well, I consider it being a virgin because I hadn't chosen to, you know, to have sex with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So it was brutal. And by the time I got outside, he comes walking out. He had called a cab, didn't say a word to me. And it was just this, I was trying to like, my head was just spinning and I was trying to piece the night together. And all I remember is that one drink. And I had partied with these guys before. And in order to be a Marine and hold your own, you gotta be able to drink.
Mm-hmm.
So I could easily, you know, have like 4 or 5 beers and be, you know, pretty buzzed and not, you know, like needing to go lay down. But one drink would, I knew right away. I was like, something is wrong. And by like in the taxi ride on the way home, he's like, I can't believe you did that. Oh. I can't believe I had to watch him do all the stuff that I've been wanting to do to you. And I was just like, what is happening here? What happened? Like, what is going on? And by the time I got back to base, like literally walking up to my barracks room, I already heard it. Like, oh, you know, you whore, blah, 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 like calling me all these names. By the time I got, I was like, what happened? I was drugged and raped and you guys think I'm a whore now? Like, no one's going to believe me. So I can't go report this. So, yeah. And then in before deployment, I was drugged and raped by a very good friend of mine that I called little brother. And he, him and I was in a, with him and another friend. And I don't know exactly what happened. And I don't know if the other friend was involved or not. I called him big brother. And he's dead now. So I can't go ask him what happened that night. But he had mentioned to another friend of mine that he knew about it. But he said that I was, he thought I was consensual. And I was like, there's no way on God's planet that I would have ever, that would have ever been consensual. Everyone that knew me knew that that would never, I would never go for this kid. He was way younger than me. He was like my little brother. And he was a troublemaker. And years later, I didn't report that one either, because the same night he drugged and raped me. He sodomized me as well. My boyfriend at the time, I was trying to get a hold of him. And he was caught in an orgy with my roommate and another girl and two other guys. And this other guy was trying to get in the room and get involved. And they wouldn't let him in. So he called PMO and they show up. And the girls were like, oh, they were raping us. So everyone, I lived with like maybe two other girls in the entire barracks. I don't know, a couple hundred guys, and they all wanted us gone. Like, they walked by my room and be like, you don't belong here. Get the hell out. I had nobody. And these were guys I was getting ready to deploy with. So I didn't say anything, and it really was hard to get over. It was very difficult. I didn't trust anyone, and I had to, you know, deploy with these people. And thank God on my deployment, I met my best friend, and he saved my life. Like, something else happened out there. In fact, it was the story I shared at the Vet Together event that got me on this podcast. And it was the story, one of the worst days of my life. It was on May 1st, 2008 in Fallujah. And, you know, like I had said, my sister had been born at the time. So she was the love of my life. Like, I raised her. She is my world. And I went, called home to say happy birthday to her, because I was due for, I was going to be the lead sweep commander or sweep team leader on the convoy the next day. So I needed to call home because it was a pretty dangerous mission. And I wanted to say happy birthday to her. And my mom says that she's been watching too much TV because she said she got raped and sexually assaulted. And my brother was living with them at the time. And I knew it right away. Something in me hit me like a train. I couldn't breathe. Like, the love of my life was going through the worst amount of pain anyone could ever imagine. And I felt responsible because I hadn't stopped it when I could have, or thought, you know, you always blame yourself. I know it's not my fault. I know I couldn't have done anything, but you don't feel like that at that moment. You just feel completely responsible. And I mean, she was like my child. And there is someone knocking at the door, one of my friends, just trying to call home to say goodbye to her, you know, say hi to her parents before her convoy. And I don't get angry. I'm very kind of a cool, calm. I don't get pissed off a lot, but when I do, it's dangerous. And I just opened that door and I let her have it for no reason other than she was being annoying. And it was the absolute worst moment of my life. So I said horrible things to her. I made her cry. And she was just like bawling her eyes out. She's like, I just want to call them up and talk to my parents for my convoy. And I didn't care. And she got blown up and killed with three other people that night. Like, literally hours later. And that was the last thing I said to her. She didn't get a call home and talk to her family. And I felt like I didn't want to live. I did not want to come home. So I was really like just praying every morning that I would step on a landmine and not be able to, you know, not come home, that I would be able to jump in front of like a teammate and like give my life for theirs. Like I wanted to be the one jumping on the grenade. Every time we went out, I was like, where's a grenade I could jump on? Like that's how much I didn't want to come home. And I met my best friend out there, and he's the reason I'm alive today and still my best friend. And he has gotten me through hell and back, and I owe him everything, him and my sister.
And how did he talk you down off of that ledge? What did he do?
He didn't treat me any differently. He just was there for me when I needed someone to talk to. I trusted him complicitly. I don't know why or how. It just, like, I felt like I had known him my entire life. And just over, you know, over the years, we've grown, like, this incredible bond that no one could ever break. And it's just, it's really helped heal my heart and just to be able to keep going. And, you know, it was just the fact that he saw all of me and he still cared about me. And yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So how did you decide to write a book, and why did you choose such an attention grabbing title? When I saw it on Amazon, and I did order it, by the way, it should be here tomorrow. Good. But when I saw it and it said, "Thank you for raping me," is on its way to your house, it's kind of startles you a little bit.
I definitely chose the title to evoke a strong reaction, whether that's a negative reaction, whether that's a positive, whether that's heartbreaking, whether that's anger, sadness, whatever. It's meant to evoke a strong reaction, because what I want people to do is see that and be like, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense. And then to turn it over and read the back, which tells you a lot about who I am and where I've come from and how I've used my trauma and all the heartbreak and all the some of the most horrific things that can ever happen to people has happened to me. And I had always loved and appreciated, like, I found such beauty in, you know, like the children of child, like the story of child soldiers that turn their life around and become these incredible humanitarians and human beings. Some of those incredible people alive have gotten there because of their trauma. Their trauma gave them purpose. And I wanted to share with other people that their trauma, especially their rape, you really can use it to empower you to find a strength you would have never had in a million years if it hadn't happened. And it is, you know, some people have asked me, like, what would you, if you could go back in time and do anything over, if you could change anything, would you? And I say no. Because, you know, did I want to get raped? Oh my God, no. No one would ever want that to ever happen to them. But do I want to take it away? No. And the reason is because that gave me a strength that I will never lose. That gave me this power to know I could do anything. I could get through anything that life throws at me. And that is such an incredible gift and a tool you can use for the rest of your life. And it's made me who I am today. It made me go and travel and find myself again in, you know, in different countries. It made me able to say, yeah, I'm not the smartest cookie in the box. I mean, I'm not the brightest crayon in the box. I almost failed out of high school. I really struggle learning. But guess what? I'm going to be a doctor soon. Mm-hmm. Because I won't give up. Because I know if I can get through that, I can get through anything. So I am thankful for it. Because it's made me into who I am today. And I wouldn't trade who I am and the things I've done and the places I've seen. I've been to places so beautiful, they make you cry. I have been to places where you see in photographs that you look at them and you're like, no, that has to be Photoshop. There is no way that this is that beautiful. The Photoshop or the picture doesn't even do the place justice. And all of that, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change not being able to be a mother now, because a lot of the stuff I went through, I ended up having a hysterectomy and I can't be a mother. Mm. And I wouldn't change that because I, you know, it absolutely ripped me apart in more ways than one. Mm-hmm. who knows if there's a child in my future that I will be able to change their life. And it was meant to be. Like, I felt that if I was meant to have been a mother, it would have happened, you know, like the miscarriage I had wouldn't have miscarried. It would have, you know, been born. And that's just kind of how I live my life, using your trauma to, I always say, you can take the worst moments of your life to create the best moments of your life. And I truly 100% believe that you can take any negative in your life and turn it into something positive.
I have no words. I can't even respond to that just because it's so powerful. So thank you for sharing so incredibly authentically and real. And I just cannot believe how much you have weathered, but you are here today and your purpose is to help other people and help them navigate their own trauma. And do you feel like a part of this and all of your outreach in the book is kind of a way to make amends with your sister because you couldn't help her before?
Yes, absolutely. It was, and not necessarily, she hasn't talked to me since 2008. She wants nothing to do with me. So it's been very, very, very heartbreaking because I knew this book was going to, I try to believe that she will, but I don't think she's ever going to talk to me again. There's, you know, bridges that I have not only burned, but blown up and disintegrated. And like, there's no, like, you know, my brother already tried to have me killed. I had a gang hit out on me. That's another part of the book. But I also want the people listening to know, like, you see me now and you see I'm doing much better, but there were times where I was not able to get off the couch. I, you know, drank a bottle of wine every day and ate pizza and cried and you have to feel it. You really have to allow yourself to feel it. And the reason is because you're never going to heal if you don't. And the other thing that's so amazing about going through trauma and about coming out scarred and burned, and you're forged in fire and you come out sharper than ever. If you choose, it's going to be your choice. And if you choose to, and just that moment of triumph where you're like, I survived hell, bring it on. Like, come at me now. What do you got? Come on, bring it on. Like, type of thing. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely times where you have to let yourself feel that pain. You have to have that time where you cry and you need the support of your family and your friends. And, you know, that vacation where you just need to run away for a little while. You definitely need that, but don't get stuck in that victim cycle where you just allow yourself, like, it's easy to get stuck in it. And I've gotten stuck in it for months before, and it just takes like a friend, you know, to say, okay, enough of this. Like, you're so much stronger than this. You've been through more. Or it just takes that moment in your life where you're like, okay, it's like a weight loss. It's like, all right, mm-hmm. put down the Twinkies, just stop eating the pizza. And now we're going to do the hard work to really come back from this injury. And you can come back better and stronger than you'd ever been before.
Mm-hmm. Because of it and in spite of it.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. And did you go through any official type mental treatments? Like, were there any modalities that you went through, like EMDR or exposure therapy?
I have been studying psychology and sexual assault and trauma and PTSD and anxiety disorders for a very, very long time, for about 15 years now. And I did go seek help several different times. The first one was a civilian doctor, and she was actually one of the first people she was a professional that I opened up to talk to about sexual assault and different things like that. And it didn't help me at all. Like, it was like talking to a friend, but all of what she was telling me, I already knew I needed work on. And like, I was already doing exercise. I was already writing. I was already, you know, doing this, doing that. And the other psychologist I saw while in the military, it was just like, you walk in and it's like, okay, we're going to prescribe you this. We're going to prescribe you this, 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 and this. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I want to get through this on my own. I know I can get through this on my own. And like, if I didn't want to take their drugs, they wouldn't even really want to see me. Mm-hmm. Or they're like, oh, you're fine. Like after the second session, like, oh, you're fine. And, you know, we don't need to have any more sessions. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm really dying inside, but okay, thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time. Or trying to explain to someone what it's like to have to open up a dead baby body and, you know, how hard that was and all these other difficult stuff. And they're just sitting behind their desk with their little tie and they're like taking notes and they're like, oh, wait, what does that mean? Okay, you can't even comprehend what I'm talking about. So it was just, it didn't work for me. I know it really helps a lot of other people, but for me, it was about exercise. It was about helping other people. That is one of the best forms of therapy for me, is being able to use my trauma and what I went through to help better other people's lives. And that's kind of been my therapy. Traveling also is a huge therapy for me, because a lot of times when we come back from combat, and just to let everyone know, like, I actually was in combat. I was part of the Lioness program, and I was attached to 2-3, 3-5, and 3-6 infantry units in Fallujah, Iraq in 2008. So I did, you know, clearing houses, we did raids, we did entry checkpoints. So I was in direct combat.
And you saw probably a lot of things that nobody should ever see.
Oh yeah, definitely. And even more so than a lot of the guys, because we dealt with the women and children and the aftermath of war. So we had to, you know, search the kids coming in with their limbs blown off. We had to, you know, see the, cause anyone that was going to the hospital had to come through us. And, you know, seeing dead bodies on the side of the road, that didn't bother me. Seeing men get shot and killed, that didn't bother me. Seeing women getting shot was, it kind of stings a little bit. But when it's like this kid's coming through the checkpoint with his arm off and he's screaming, and those haunt you. Or the girls that actually burn themselves to become disfigured and ugly. So their 60-year-old husband at the age of, she's 13 and he's 60, that he won't sleep with her. Like, so she disfigures herself through acid. Like, that's the kind of stuff that we had to witness coming through. Wow. So, and then you're daily falling asleep to like 240 gunfire, incoming RPGs or indirect fire, that you just hear that whistle and you just wait for it to explode. And then you go back to bed if there's no screaming, you know, that's life every day over there. And it was, you know, you get into that like comfort where it's just like, if I die today, I'm doing something like meaningful, or it's kind of simple. You just stay alive. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you need to worry about. There's no, you know, all this other crazy stuff that you come back home to. It's just, it's a lot different. And then a lot of times when these men and women come home from combat, that adrenaline's gone, that adventure's gone. And then they just fall into this, like, you know, the people that you see driving like zombies to their 9-to-5 job, that they just, it's gone, like their soul's gone. And traveling really brought that back for me. Traveling, I would challenge myself and I'd get on a plane and have nowhere to stay when I got there, like at my destination. It was like, oh, okay, so let me go find a hotel. Well, I'm not going to book it online. I'm going to walk around. I'm going to find my own hotel.
Oh, wow.
That kind of a thing. Yeah. And it was just like constantly challenging myself, pushing those limits. Okay, well, what would it be like to get out to not have a phone for a week? And I do that. Like, what would it be like if you don't speak the language and you just go and you live there? Like, so yeah, it helped me a lot, really. Help me cope.
That's impressive that you were able to take your own healing into your own hands when other things weren't working for you.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions, or, I don't know, a soapbox that you can stand on about what can be better done to help sexual assault survivors?
Talking about it. Definitely talking about it, because I believe that the more people come forward, and it's really sad to see how far the Me Too movement put us back. In my opinion, it turned sexual assault into a joke again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just breaks my heart because I read this guy's on one of the social media pages I'm on. He shared his story of sexual assault. And since I published this book, I have had dozens of men reach out to me and share their story. And a lot of them, I'm the first person they ever told it to. And with survivors, especially the men, they are going through so much hard time. Imagine hiding a secret that intense for 30 years, you know, and finally, so many of them have the same exact description of the way they feel after they tell. And it's the same exact way when I felt for the first time I told someone. I didn't tell anyone until I was 23 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, about my brother the first mm-hmm. time. And it took me forever. And I told him, my boyfriend at the time, they all describe it the same way. I could finally breathe. It was like this secret was eating you from the inside out, and it was suffocating you. And for the first time, like, you tell those words and it's just like, oh, you can breathe again. It's like, you know, like almost drowning and coming up for that air of oxygen. And it's just like, it's incredible. It's a very incredible feeling, very scary feeling, especially if someone opens up to you for the first time. Like, it's a very delicate situation. Like, knowing how to handle it is not easy. And, you know, just that talking to someone about it and opening up will not only, I believe, change the perspectives of other people, especially if, you know, a lot of these people that come forward, easily come forward, in my opinion and from my experience, their stories aren't quite as traumatic. You know, a lot of these people drink too much. They make that really stupid choice to go home with that guy, or they end up at a frat party and they, you know, end up in this guy's bed and they're really drunk. And then the next morning they're like, oh, we had sex and then they regret it. Mm. And then they claim rape. And this isn't just, you know, I will be the first person to like go to bat for anyone that will say like I was sexually assaulted or I was raped. But when I find out that it's more of a regret situation, God be with you, because you better run. It just really, it sets everything back so far. But I feel that if more people were to come out and be able to talk about their horrific trauma, that people will see what an issue it is. You know, 34% of rape victims are raped by family members. And like the child abuse is like the children's sexual assault it's devastating, and it stays with you for the rest of your life. And then if more men came forward and talked about their sexual assaults, I believe, and these aren't just like, you know, guys that you're like, oh, well, you're gay. No, there is no questioning that man's, you know, sexuality, because he's a complete alpha man. Not that there's anything wrong, you know, rape is rape. I don't care if, you know, it's male on male or male on female or female on female. I don't care. If they don't want to have sex with you and they have made it very well known, that's rape. That doesn't matter what sexual preference you have. But it's like, if more people were to come forward and actually share their stories and not be so ashamed about it, because it is a crime that is occurring at a very alarming rate. And your child is more likely to get raped at home than shot at school. Like that, those are just statistics. That's fact. And we aren't talking about that. It seems like, you know, I don't know what generation you are or most of the listeners are, but like the generation I grew up in, it started out as you don't sleep with someone until you're married. Like you mm-hmm. don't have sex until you get married. And like then my parents' era was even more strict than that. But it's turning into an environment where it's, you know, online sex now. It's like taboo. It's like bad. but at the same time, it's so prevalent and everyone's doing it, but no one's talking about it. It's still something shameful and dirty. But, you know, I think that, or you get into these like super, like restricted religions or these very, like these cultures that shame people that have intercourse before marriage, different things like that. Like these guys that grow up in such a repressed environment, it's a big indication of sexual assault. But anyways, off my soapbox.
And with your research and all of the things that you've learning and the things that you have delved into for the past 15 years, is there anything that you want to share with us that's striking to you that you've discovered or have learned about?
Yes. It all kind of wraps down, like boils down to trauma is trauma. And what people don't, you know, a lot of the, you know, the two, like the Iraq and like the wars in Afghanistan. And now it's kind of tapering out. I went and talked at Corporal's Course and not one single one of them had deployed. So we're coming into a new generation where these people aren't deploying and you get these like combat veterans that are like, oh, you don't know trauma. Mm-hmm. Like you shouldn't have PTSD, but there are more people, there are more non-combat veterans killing themselves in combat vets now. And there, you know, people will argue and say that you don't know what trauma is. Well, what about that mother in Africa that had her daughter raped and killed in front of her? Like, if that's not trauma, I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. It really, and I use the example because I was trying to explain it to someone and I was trying to explain it to myself. And I was like, you know what? Like, it's like Castaway when Wilson floats away in the ocean. It's traumatic. It's like so sad, but it's a volleyball. So it's really about understanding what that person went through, because you can't judge a book by its cover. You have no idea what that person went through in order for them to react the way they are now. And if you understood that, if you tried to glimpse in their past and see what could possibly have created them into this person, then you'll better know how to treat them and understand them. Because if you don't really pay attention to any of that, it's pointless. It's like going in, you know, like, you know, you have cancer and you don't tell the doctor and you're like, oh, my throat's sore. And they give you antibiotics for a sore throat. Unless they know what's going on, they can't help you. So be honest with your therapist. Be honest with the people in your life that care about you. And then culture has such a huge part in people's healing and how they interact, you know, and how they heal and their resilience. Like, culture is extremely necessary to understand. And, you know, one person's religion or their culture is going to help them recover much quicker, or it's going to be a detriment. Or, you know, like, you're a lot of the people after sexual assault, they're, you know, they would like to actually return to a relationship or possibly have a future relationship with people. And then you have other cultures where you're just hoping to make it, because not one man in your culture is going to touch you because you're dirty. And if you're going to be treating somebody that already has that put out of their mind, because that's what their culture is, like, you're now going to be like a house mom. You're going to be the caretaker of other children. You're not going to get married because no man will come near you. And you have to understand that before you treat them, because you can't go and treat a Thai sex trafficked kid off the street the same as a, you know, a little white girl taken from her home in, you know, in New York. It's going to be extremely different how you have to treat these people. So you really need to understand the background. Trauma is trauma. We don't know what they went through, but you need to find out.
Do you also mean organizational culture too? Like the organization you were in, the Marines and the military in general, does that have a play on how people heal from trauma?
Well, okay, imagine this. You give up your citizenship. You move to a country that is extremely foreign to you. You might speak the same language, but they have a different dialect. You become so ingrained in their principles. They have new laws. They have their own compound. It's almost like being in a cult, and that's your life. It becomes your life. And then when you get out, you leave it. And it's like culture shock because you can't go back to what you were before because that culture was so ingrained in you that that's who you become. You're a veteran for life. You know, it's, they have their own laws. They have their own houses. They have their own grocery stores. It's a community itself. It's its own culture. And that is absolutely very necessary. Like you do have those organizations that they do have their culture, and you're going to have those little niches like, okay, Rangers have their own cultures. Navy SEALs have their own culture. And I'm not saying like we have to go in depth into understanding each little branch of that culture. You know, each tribe is going to have a different kind of culture. But if you can kind of grasp the, you know, that area or, you know, the military itself, the Marines itself, the Navy itself, if you get a better understanding of that, I think that's a huge step in the right direction to treat people and give them what they really need.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of organizations are you a part of or you endorse? Who have you worked with or working with now?
There's a lot of different ones. And so Vet Together is ran by a very good friend of mine. Him and his wife kind of are heading it up. And this is the event that I went to that ended up me being invited on here. But they do a lot more networking and giving opportunity for people to come together as veterans, as supporters of veterans, for that camaraderie, that tribe that they're lacking. Basically, they kind of describe it as you need to check into your unit now. You got out of the military and you feel like you're not at home, but now you need to check into your new unit. Greater Veterans of America, another good friend of mine, is Nick Richardson. He heads that nonprofit up. But word of warning is, don't trust all these nonprofits. Like, it's probably why you brought it up. You know, you really need to do your research. Anyways, it's also called Greater Veterans Spokane. Like, that's their social media page. Okay. The Saluting Marine, I'm actually friends with him too. He's the Marine. Yeah.
So I know Sabrina.
Yes. Yeah. And then for Veterans Sake Foundation, I went and actually, I met him, the guy that does it. He's just such an awesome, it was him and his like daughter, I believe. And they trained service dogs for vets. And what I like about them is that there's no paperwork involved because of confidentiality, or it's confidential paperwork. I'm not sure what they do now, but they specifically started doing this for these special ops guys that were very hesitant to go seek help or like sign any paperwork for a service dog because of their like security clearance or other, you know, other implications. And then Veterans for Natural Rights. You know, you don't have to agree with it, but it's Matt Call. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. I've talked to him a couple times, but it's about he does a lot of work to legalize medical cannabis. Mm-hmm. All the medical benefits that have not been available to veterans because of these, you know, federal laws. Mm-hmm. So those are just a couple organizations that I have, you know, really done my homework on. I've worked with them. And then the last one is the Barracks. The Barracks is out of Muskogee, Oklahoma. And it's just an awesome, basically they bring everything into like one. They have places for families to stay. They have a resource center. They are very active in their community. And the guy's name is Victor Lazima. I've actually been invited out to an event of theirs where I spoke. So I've met him and his family in person. It was an incredible trip. Made a lot of really good connections there. But that's another great organization.
Very cool. And if you send me the list, I'll post it on your episode page. So perfect. It's just one click away for everybody.
Okay, good. Yeah, awesome.
So our time is coming to a close, but I do like to ask people, especially military veterans, do you have a funny story to share with me? I want to liven it up and lighten it up a little bit before we leave.
Oh, man, there's so many. Well, most of mine have some pretty sick, twisted humor.
Okay, so we've already talked about poop a lot.
None of the sex jokes. But, should I bring that one up or should I? Because it has been a very sexually depressing, episode. Okay, I guess I'll share it.
Okay.
Well, we're all adults here, and many of us, if we don't have another significant other, we tend to use the toys. But I won't get into that. Anyhow, so the night before boot camp, I was settling in. I had my own little date night by myself, had a movie that I wanted to watch, had my last meal type thing, and I wanted that last So I was okay. And I was almost there. I had my rabbit out. Worst burning sensation of my entire life. Basically, I broke that thing and it was leaking battery acid all over.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm running naked to the kitchen, finding baking soda and or baking powder. I can't remember which one it was. But yeah, I was thank God I paid attention in science class. And then another naked shower incident where I was in the shower trailer and a bunch of the cleaners in Iraq came in, all men. And I was standing there butt naked, and at that time we couldn't leave our rifle anywhere. So we had to take it and I grab my rifle, rack it back, point it at them. They're just I don't know if they're more afraid of a naked woman because of their culture, it's never seen, or a naked woman pointing a gun at them. So yeah, those are kind of my light stories.
Well, I do appreciate that after everything that you've gone through, you still have a sense of humor about sexuality and that it's not a taboo subject and you're not hiding yourself from anything. And we are adults. I'll put, a little warning
disclaimer
on it because we are talking about sensitive topics, sexual sense, as it is anyway. But, if this could help just one person, and then absolutely, they can smile afterwards.
Yeah. I also, on my website, it's just www.athenaives.com. I have done a lot of blogs on why I didn't report sexual assault, or struggles with intimacy after rape. A lot of people have issues with that, both men and women, men of the spouse or whoever has been sexually assaulted, they have a difficult time knowing how to handle their loved one. Mm-hmm. So I put stuff on that, but then there's humorous stuff. I did Tinder dating in Thailand. Oh my God. Those are some stories. Yeah. So if people are, you don't have to subscribe or anything. It's just on my website. So.
Well, we'll have to have you back for more stories.
Full of them.
And then also to talk more about your research as you continue it too, because it's fascinating.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So,
Athena, do you have any closing thoughts before we go?
If you are struggling right now with feeling like you aren't good enough or feeling like the world would be better off without you, I understand that completely. I've been through this several times. If you are able to look up the movie Breathe, B-R-E-A-T-H-E, it changed my life. It really was incredible. And basically what I got out of it is, are you willing to stay alive to save a life? Hmm. You don't know how many lives you're going to save tomorrow. You have no idea if you're going to be driving down the road and see a car accident. You saved a family of five. You have no idea what you're capable of doing. And are you willing to stay alive to save a life? You just have to keep that focus in your mind when you are feeling like the world's better off without you, when you really don't see your life improving at all. Your life might not improve. Hate to say that. There's some people with terminal illness, but you don't know how many lives you can save before you go. So, that's kind of what I'd like to leave everyone with.
That is one hell of a closing thought. Yeah. Dang. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of veterans are very selfless. We joined to serve. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would be willing to sacrifice their own death, their own escape, their belief that it's their way out, no more pain, yet they're willing to go through pain possibly to help someone. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Athena. I really appreciate the time that you spent with us and everything you've shared and how open and authentic you are. I wish you the best with everything that you're doing, and you must keep us updated on what's going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really excited just to continue working with you guys too. Yay!
thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast. And you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.